Welcome to the Jonah Carey Show, friends. Glad you could tune in this Friday and every Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports app, and all OTT devices. Let's take a look at what's going on in the world of baseball, and we will start with our top story of the week. It's the Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles going nuts at each other. All right, let's review the timeline of events here. We can see it on screen, but we will discuss a little bit. So first of all, a couple weeks ago, Manny Machado slides hard at the second base, spikes Dustin Pedroia. There's a lot of frou-frou over this. The Red Sox are very upset. Pedroia is their veteran leader and tempers flare. So 2 days later, we get Red Sox relief pitcher Matt Barnes throws at Manny Machado's head. Then we get Dylan Bundy retaliating a week later by hitting Mookie Betts. Chris Sale comes back and throws behind Manny Machado. Kevin Gausman the next day hits Xander Bogaerts with a curveball. And then Manny Machado finally hits a home run and takes about 30 seconds, which felt like 30 years, to round the bases. So a large sequence of events, but let's break this down. Who is to blame here? To me, it's the Boston Red Sox, and I will explain why. If you have a situation where you are not happy with something that happened on the field, the solution is never to throw at a guy, never to try to injure the guy. It is completely unacceptable to me because, look, you could say I'm going to hit the guy in the ribs, I'm going to send a message, what have you, but if you miss, it could be absolutely disastrous. Injuring a guy, or worse, beaning him and creating potentially dangerous and devastating health effects, that is just not worth it for spiking somebody, or maybe you did something that was untoward. The Red Sox are my number one culprit, but my number two culprit is actually Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, generally speaking, has to take charge of these situations, and they did not do a good job here, from the commissioner's office to the umpires. Tossing Kevin Gausman from a game for throwing a looping curveball, first of all, is ridiculous. But even beyond that, they have to take a good hard look at something like the Machado slide. Was it clean or was it dirty? Well, maybe it deserved a one-game suspension, something minor like that. That could have potentially averted all of this stuff. But the broader message here is Major League Baseball needs to take charge of events in general so that teams don't go into vigilante justice. Headhunting, things like that are just unacceptable in baseball. Look, we all want the best players on the field. If you throw at guys and potentially injure guys, pitchers get ejected. This is getting rid of a lot of the best players in the game. We don't want this. Let MLB handle what's what, and otherwise just leave well enough alone. That's what I would do. All right, let's move on to our next topic, and it is not great news in the world of baseball. Unfortunately, three different pitching aces have landed on the disabled list just in the past few days, and we will break them down one by one, and we will start with Noah Syndergaard. Man, this kills me. He's Thor. You know, I'm not a Mets fan per se, but how could you not be anything but devastated for the New York Mets with this injury? He's going to miss 3 months with a partial lat tear. And this goes back to what we talked about a little bit in the offseason. Noah Syndergaard, already a tremendous pitcher, throwing triple digits, and he says, you know what, I gained 20 pounds of muscle so I could throw even harder. Velocity is great, obviously it's highly valued in today's game, but the thing is there's limits to the human arm, and at a certain point velocity can make you get injured. Now, did it lead specifically to this lat tear? There's all kinds of kinetic chain issues that makes it hard to determine, but the bottom line here is that maybe 20 pounds of muscle when you're already throwing 101, a little extraneous. Syndergaard, who had been the one Mets pitcher who seemed to be reliably healthy, now on the DL for 3 months. Bad effects for the Mets. They're already missing Lugo, they're missing Mats, Matt Harvey's not pitching well, Cespedes is on the disabled list. A horrendous start for the New York Mets in every single way. All right, our second injury to look at is Cole Hamels of the Texas Rangers. He's going to miss 8 weeks. He's got an oblique strain. Hamels has been a remarkably durable pitcher throughout his major league career, one of the most durable, in fact, in all of baseball. But here, yeah, it's bad news for the Rangers with 2 months on the DL. And again, we're dealing with a team that's already down. The Rangers themselves are near the bottom of their own division. They've had injuries to Adrian Beltre. They've had problems in their starting rotation. And if you look at the right side of their infield, Mike Napoli looks like he might be cooked. And Rougned Odor, who's considerably younger than Mike Napoli, for some reason is not hitting at all either. This is a team with a lot of problems, and it could get interesting when we get down the stretch here. If the Rangers aren't quite in it, do they consider trading somebody like Yu Darvish, who's coming up on free agency? All kinds of possibilities open up if the Rangers don't start winning games. Losing Hamels obviously affects that. And finally on the DL, we've got Corey Kluber again. Ugh, Corey Kluber, we want him to be pitching. He's such a fantastic pitcher. Love him in every way, but he's got a lower back injury. He's on the disabled list. No current timetable for his return. It's not necessarily a three-month situation like it is with Syndergaard. Hopefully not a two-month situation like it is with Hamels. Maybe he's back in a couple weeks, but we just don't know right now. But here's the thing about the Cleveland Indians. They potentially can withstand this. Number one, they've got good starting pitching. Last year, don't forget, they were missing Danny Salazar and Carlos Carrasco and went all all the way to Game 7 of the World Series without those guys throwing in the rotation. So they could potentially withstand this. They've also got a deep bullpen, of course, led by Andrew Miller and Cody Allen, who've been dynamite. So there are ways around this if this is just a two or three starts missing for the Cleveland Indians. A better scenario than it is for the Mets or the Rangers. So to recap, we've got three aces going on the disabled list. We've got Noah Syndergaard, we've got Cole Hamels, and we've got Corey Kluber. For the Mets and the Rangers, I would be worried. For the Cleveland Indians, the defending AL champions, they're still looking pretty good. In what's kind of a muddled division, there is an opportunity there. All right, when we return after the break, we will have Stock Watch. We will look at which teams are up and down in the world of baseball. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Jonah Carey Show, friends. Let's jump right into the next segment. It is Jonah's one-word take. One-word take is very, very simple. We look at some fun stories within the world of baseball, and I weigh in with one word, maybe a little bit of embellishment after that. And we will start in Cincinnati, where Billy Hamilton has agreed to a foot race with John Ross, the number one draft pick for the Cincinnati Bengals, blazingly fast at an all-time record for the 40-yard dash in the NFL Combine. My one-word take on a potential Billy Hamilton versus John Ross matchup, whoosh. Is that a word? It's an onomatopoeia, technically. But we'll go with that. Hamilton versus Ross, potentially incredible. And look, we always wonder how this is going to go. We talk about the fastest guy in this sport or that sport, but it's always interesting to see them match up. Hamilton, probably the undisputed fastest player in all of baseball, absolutely devastating on the base paths and just does so much for the Reds in terms of his speed. And Ross, just a flat-out burner. We'll see what happens, but some fun times potentially ahead in Cincinnati, where you've got two of the fastest athletes in professional sports going at it in their respective sports. Our second topic for Jonah's one-word take, it is Jose Altuve. Well, there's a little bit of a skirmish in a recent Houston Astros-Texas Rangers game, and as you can see, Altuve's kind of looking around, trying to figure out what's going on over here, and my one-word take on this, ladder. He needs a ladder, dude. That's what he has to have. Jose Altuve, notoriously lacking in height. In fact, there was a website called How Many Altuves, which basically measures other players in relation to Altuve. So Randy Johnson, for instance, would be probably about 1.2 Altuves. He would be a lot more, considerably taller, and so on. Altuve, a unit of measurement, a devastating offensive player and a great player overall for the Houston Astros. Yes, but he could use a ladder in this particular situation. And our final one-word take, we got a one-armed catcher. 14-year-old Luke Terry continues to defy all odds, playing in high school ball and just doing a terrific job, able to transfer the ball from his catching hand right to the same hand and throw down to second base. He's been tremendous. Jim Abbott has weighed in on this, and my one-word take on this is Abbott. Jim Abbott, the former major league pitcher who had a great career despite pitching with one arm and really did just such a great job, rested his glove on his other arm and was able to throw using it that way and was able to field with the same hand that he threw with. Just a terrific pitcher over the course of his career and a great story. And this is a great story too. You gotta love Luke Terry. You gotta love the perseverance. He's been something to watch. A lot of fun. Hats off to Luke Terry. All right, let's move on to one of our favorite segments every week, and that is Stock Watch. So, Stock Watch, here's how it works. It's very simple. We take the teams that are up or down in the world of baseball and examine how that came to be. And first of all, we've got the Houston Astros, who are riding high. First place in the AL West. I liked them at the beginning of the season, and they have achieved and then some this season, led by a whole bunch of different contributors. But really, one guy to look at is our pal Chris Devensky. We've talked about Chris Devensky on the show before, but let's just appreciate how great this guy is. Andrew Miller got absolutely deified for how good he was last season and the fact that he could throw multiple innings. Devensky is like a rich man's Andrew Miller. Instead of throwing 1 2/3, something like that, Devensky has thrown 4 innings at a time on multiple occasions. He's been absolutely tremendous this season. He's striking out 2 batters for every one inning pitch this year. He's been unbelievable. Astros have been tremendous. Devensky's doing the great job. You appreciate their efforts. Houston currently in first place. Moving on, we've got the Minnesota Twins. The Minnesota Twins are also in first place. Oh, interesting. We didn't necessarily expect that at this point in the season. And you have to tip your cap in this case to Irvin Santana. The veteran Irvin Santana has really been the guy who has done it for the Twins. How has he done it? Well, maybe a little bit of luck involved. He's 5-0 with a 0.66 ERA. That's lovely. But here's the thing. Santana's been getting by on unbelievable good fortune. He's got the lowest batting average on balls in play in all of baseball, which simply means if the ball's put into play, is it caught or not? Typically, the league rate is about 300. Santana's sitting in the 120s right now. which is not skill, it's largely luck, maybe a little bit of defense. That's going to regress. So is the fact that almost every batter that he's put on base has been stranded there. In fact, he's number one in Major League Baseball in what's called strand rate, which is also an effect of luck. So Santana, listen, he's had a nice career. He's a pretty good pitcher. He is not Bob Gibson on steroids. That is not going to happen. Santana will regress, but we tip our caps to the Twins as well for their hot start, even if Santana is not necessarily going to maintain. And on the upside, we've also got the Washington Nationals. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games, which is actually slowing down by their standards. They've been so, so good this season. But they're in first place by a comfortable margin in the NL East. And you know what? This might be one of the easier cakewalks in all of baseball when you look at how good the Nationals are. The guy who's been leading the pack over there, well, technically three of them when you look at Bryce Harper, Daniel Murphy, but Ryan Zimmerman, he's been the big surprise. Ryan Zimmerman, of course, considerably older than Harper, also older than Murphy. Here's a guy who came up at the beginning of the Nats' existence and seemed to be a great prospect, was a great player at third base for a while, and then just started to regress. Shoulder injury, ends up at first base, isn't able to hit anymore. Well, Zimmerman has been able to dip into that fountain of youth and that kind of rejuvenation that has affected a lot of players who are, you know, moving on in their major league careers, where they're essentially swinging for the fences. Sometimes it could be as simple as that. Mark Trumbull went from a pretty good power hitter to a devastating one that way. Josh Donaldson refashioned himself into a superstar that way. We've seen all kinds of hitters just say, why am I even trying to hit ground balls or even line drives or shorten up with two strikes? I'm going to swing for the fences. Zimmerman has done that. He has been an absolute force for the Nationals. This is a ridiculously good offense. My hat's off to anybody in the NL East who could potentially contend with the Nationals. I don't see it happening. All right, on the downside on Stockwatch, we've got, well, it's our Texas Rangers. And yeah, we mentioned the Cole Hamels injury, 3-7 in their last 10 games for Texas. And now we've got other problems on the roster. And I mentioned it before, but let's go back to Mike Napoli. Napoli, of course, a leader on a previous Texas Rangers team that went deep in the playoffs. He fared well with the Red Sox. He was a leader on the Cleveland Indians last year, picked it up. But man, he is fighting it right now. He's been one of the worst everyday hitters in all of baseball and just a big hole in that lineup. And it's going to create an interesting roster situation. Adrian Beltre will eventually come back from the disabled list. They've got Joey Gallo absolutely mashing. What do they do with Gallo? They have to find a way to keep him in the lineup. Now, the outfield's been a little bit unsettled, especially in left. There's some DH possibilities. You can move some things around, but I just wonder how long it's going to last with Napoli. And this guy this age, when he's getting on into his mid-30s, you kind of wonder how much he's going to be able to maintain. We'll see how it goes. But for the Rangers, not great things, and it could set up a potential seller situation at the trade deadline. Also on the downside, we've got, well, their mates in the AL West, the Oakland Athletics. The A's were off to a great start this season. They really were playing as one of the better teams in their division, and it was led by a guy named Kendall Graveman. You might remember Kendall Graveman as a little bit of a throw-in in the Josh Donaldson trade with the Toronto Blue Jays. Graveman, an okay pitcher for the first couple years of his career, but all of a sudden came out like gangbusters at the beginning of this year. What happened? He started throwing one and only one pitch, which was his fastball. He throws it 96% of the time. That is Mariano Rivera-esque, except instead of having to throw one inning at a time, he's got to throw seven. It's been a formula that's worked for him so far this season, but he absolutely got roughed up in his last start. But it's one of the great experiments in all of baseball. Oakland, hot start, recent cold streak. Yes, all this stuff blends together, but I'll be interested to watch Graveman as the season goes on. Can one pitcher maintain on basically one pitch throughout the season? Could say a lot in terms of the A's being at least a semi-competitive team versus, yeah, a team that really struggles depending on how Graveman fares. And also on the downside, we've got the Kansas City Royals. It's not the first time we've talked about the Royals in this segment, unfortunately. The two-time AL pennant winners, they are really, really fighting it. They're dead last in the AL Central, not anywhere close to the fourth place team, by the way. 2-8 in their last 10 games. And on the downside, you know, you can look at a lot of different factors, but really the thing here is it sets up not so much one player, but multiple players coming into focus, and that is all the guys that are due for free agency at the end of the season. You got Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Alcides Escobar. These are core guys in that run of two straight pennant wins, and all of a sudden all these guys are up for free agency. So what do you do? Do you re-up them? Well, if you look at a guy like Alex Gordon, who they re-upped, they're regretting that every second of the day right now because Gordon has completely fallen off a cliff since the 2015 injury. So maybe you don't do that with Kane, who's coming into his 30s. Maybe you don't do it with Hosmer, whose performance has really come down. Escobar, Moustakas, these are difficult decisions to make. The Royals will have to make them, and we will see how it goes. So to recap, on the upside, we've got the Houston Astros leading the AL West. The Minnesota Twins have done a great job. They are leading the AL Central, although we'll see what happens with their current ace, Irvin Santana. And also on the upside, we've got the Washington Nationals just laying waste to the rest of the NL East, led by that trio of Bryce Harper, Daniel Murphy, and yes, Ryan Zimmerman has done a great job. On the downside, Texas Rangers, the Cole Hamels injury exacerbates things. Mike Napoli's not hitting. This could be a tough situation for Texas this year after a long run of recent success. Also on the downside, the Oakland Athletics, Kendall Graveman is the guy in focus. He's got that one pitch, the fastball that he throws pretty much exclusively. Can he keep that going? And then also the Kansas City Royals may be in sell mode at the trade deadline, and there could be a lot of takers for their veteran players. All right, let us move on as well to our next segment, and that is Nerd Alert. Dallas Keuchel. Let's discuss Dallas Keuchel. So I profiled Dallas Keuchel in my column today at CBS Sports, which is called Carry the 10, where I look at 10 big stories in the world of baseball. So we're going to get into Keuchel a little bit more over here. The 2015 Cy Young winner, his best pitch has always been a fastball. And we use fastball kind of in a mixed way. He doesn't throw it all that hard. It's about an 89-mile-an-hour pitch, which is one of the slowest in all of baseball for an everyday starting pitcher. But what makes Keuchel so great is incredible movement and especially location on the fastball. The command is exceptional when he's on his game. He was on his game in 2015 when, as we said, he ran away with the Cy Young. 2016, he was not. He would miss his spots, he would struggle with it, and it created a big effect where he just had trouble getting guys out. His ERA jumped about 2 runs from 2015 to 2016. Well, as it turns out, he had a shoulder injury in 2016, and that affected some of his performance, of course, and that held him back. You go into 2017, and now he is healthy again, and all of a sudden locating that fastball exactly where he wants to. And you look at his numbers this season, well, he has been tremendous, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. But I will cite the Irvin Santana precedent here once again. Yes, Keuchel's been excellent. Yes, his command is much better. But will he sustain with an ERA this low? Again, we're going after Bob Gibson in 1968. Kind of doubt it. Not really buying it for two reasons. Number one, batting average on balls in play, a number we referred to earlier. League average is close to 300. Keuchel's at 186, and this is not because he's striking out the world. It's because guys are hitting balls that happen to be caught. Probably a fluke, probably going to regress. Not so great for Keuchel. Number two is strand rate, another stat which we mentioned. Only Irvin Santana has been higher than the 98.7% strand rate that Keuchel has had so far this season. Extremely, extremely high. League average is in the low 70s. That's going to regress too. Still like Keuchel at the top of that rotation, but don't expect him to necessarily dominate the way that he has so far this season. That might start to correct a little bit. All right, and finally, we will leave you with one last segment on the show, or one last go-ahead on the show, and that is the great story of Air Force Technical Sergeant Lance Daigle. Well, he surprised his kids at a recent Carolina Mudcats game, and I want to leave you with this because it is a great segment, maybe even a little bit of a tearjerker. So, as we go ahead with this, tune in next week. It'll be Friday again, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, CBS Sports, the CBS Sports app, and all OTT devices. Thanks for tuning in, friends.
Fans, tonight we have a special Mudcats player catching those first pitches. Daigle, Sergeant Daigle returns home today from a 6-month deployment overseas in Southwest Asia. This marks his 4th deployment.